Hello and welcome to the Roto-World Baseball Show. I'm your host, Eric Smolsky, joined, as always, by Scott Pianowski. We were just talking, Scott. We're just a few days away from not just one game at, you know, 6 a.m., but we're going to have full, whole slates of baseball. It's super exciting.
Yeah, it really is. I'm working on my power rankings right now, and I'm baking a lot of fun into it. How much fun is this team going to be? Are they going to be on my main set? Are they the reason that you subscribe to the baseball package? And you can tell I'm hoarse from the weekend we just had with all sorts of basketball and hockey, and I was drafting it, it felt like, every minute. So March is one of the best parts of the sporting calendar. Obviously, fantasy baseball is a huge part of that. Mm-hmm. But enough of spring training and enough of, you know, crowds of 75 people watching these games. It's fun, and the snow melts. I live in a cold weather city and all that. You know, I'm all ready for spring. Spring has officially started. It hit the calendar last week. Let's bring some games that matter, Eric, and then we can start with our confirmation bias, right? So, like, when Riley Green hits a home run his first at bat, like, yeah, I was right about Riley Green. And then,
yeah, we gotta do it right from the jump.
Right, when any pitcher gets hit, you know, oh my God, you know, is his velocity down? Is his elbow hurt? Did I screw up with this pitching staff? I'm here for all of that. I can't wait.
Yeah, listen, victory lapping on spring training we don't want to do, but one game in the regular season, it's totally different ballgame for that. Fair game.
And I say that jokingly, but it's, look, we're humans. Even if we never interacted with each other on social media, anything that you feel is going to happen. Like, mm-hmm. I think Anthony Volpe is going to have a breakout season. I think his rookie year was better than people realize, and he's been a screaming draft value all spring. And if he gets off to a good start, it's just human nature to think, I got that one right. We know baseball, more than any game, it's the most measurable game there is, because it's one-on-one interactions, mm-hmm. and the noise of teammates don't really matter. So we can quantify baseball better than any other sport. And context screws up every, you know, football. Randy Moss is nothing on the Raiders. He's a god on the Patriots. It's so many moving parts with that. Baseball, it's pitcher versus batter, and it's long term, and it's 6 months, and it's all the data points. So, and I'm sure a bunch of people are going to scream out after the first week, oh, don't take anything from this. That's actually the wrong advice. You should be aggressive on the waiver wire. You're going to have some guys that are droppable, and I want you to be aggressive on the waiver wire with the bottom of your roster. You're not going to worry about a superstar or anything like that, or anybody you picked in the first half of your draft, unless they got major injured or something like that. But this whole idea that you have to, even though I know to make the right choice, you probably have to wait. But to win a competitive fantasy league, you got to be in there pitching for free agents right away.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that. That is the main scope of our show today, is just looking at, like, what constitutes early season strategy. What should you be looking at? What is noise? When should you look to make a move? That kind of stuff. You know, Scott and I will help you through some of our beliefs. You know, people have different strategies, but we will talk you through kind of what we think is the best way to approach fantasy baseball decision-making in the first couple of weeks of the season. Before we do that, I did just want to hit on a couple of the big things that happened over the weekend, and just give people our kind of instant reactions to, you know, some of the bigger item news and notes. The first one is obviously that Kevin Gausman is returning to the mound today in spring training. That's on Monday. He's set to throw about 50 pitches. If all goes well, there is a very good chance that, you know, he will make his first start in the regular season at, you know, probably at a pitch limit around like 65 pitches. But the shoulder injury that, you know, that he experienced may not actually put him on the IL. My question to you is, if you were still doing a draft, right, there are still people drafting these next few days, but are you no longer worried about Kevin Gausman because it seems like he won't be on the IL? Or is the fact that he was dealing with a shoulder injury something that still is in the back of your mind?
You know, it's not that I'm worried about him in the sense that I think he'll probably have, you know, 180 inning season or something like that. He'll be a quasi horse. But the problem, Eric, for me is that when he's expected to go, and I still have drafts coming, I'm going to draft all week. Logan Webb's available, or Castillo's available, or Kirby's available. And man, do I love that Seattle rotation. Lopez is available, and then, you know, all those soft pillow landings in the AL Central. There's somebody who isn't dinged up right now who is probably just as good as Gausman, or 90 to 95% of Gausman anyway. So I wind up just, that's a tiebreaker for me that he's not 100% right now. And he's a We hope he's okay. We're optimistic about this. That's nice. And maybe I'm kidding myself to think that any pitcher you could ever sleep well at night, but I just sleep better at night with Logan Webb. I you know, on my roster, I sleep better at night with Castillo on my roster, George Kirby on my roster, Lopez, you know, some of the guys I mentioned, and there's so many of them. That tier has like 8 or 9 guys who I can draft who don't have the little red flag next to them, don't have the little pink, whatever it is. Every site has that little thing that you're drafting, right? One of the great things about Yahoo is when you draft, you can call up the current news tab on the player. And I just don't want to worry about any pitcher I'm drafting this time of the year. So even though I haven't moved Gausman down that aggressively, I maybe bumped him around a round and a half or something like that. The tiebreaker is pushing me to all these other guys.
I agree. I think you mentioned like not wanting to miss on, you know, not wanting the risk on the early round draft picks. You know, this is a guy the last three seasons, 192 innings, 175, 185. There is a lot of wear on that arm. And so when you get an injury already, like an inflammation in the shoulder, it is something to at least think about, right? I'm not going to suggest you not draft Gausman. I don't know. I can't tell you he's more prone to injury during the season than some of these other guys. But I think to your point, I already had a couple of concerns about just like how much hard contact he gives up, yada, yada, yada. And so I just feel like I'd rather take somebody who is not currently dealing with something.
All those names I mentioned Webb and Lopez and Kirby and Castillo. You could throw Yamamoto in there if you want. I'm curious, which pitcher in that tier do you have the most shares of?
Honestly, I have the most shares of, in that group. I have the most shares of Luis Castillo. Mm-hmm. I have him above that group. And so I was jumping earlier on in drafts. I was jumping Castillo, like a little bit before that run went, because I think he was after Gausman in most of those early drafts. And so I was able to kind of get him before that other crew went. Other than that, I've been waiting, and I have a fair amount of like Logan Webb when I double up on like Webb, Bobby Miller, Webb, Max Fried, like stuff like that. Cause Logan Webb's coming off the board like the 10th or 11th starter, depending on the drafts that you're in. And so I like what I believe is the relative stability of Logan Webb with the volatility based on injuries or performance of like Scooble, Raggins, Miller, you know, Freed. And so I kind of like that one too for me.
And by the way, if we whetted your appetite for more starting pitching talk, we did a very extensive 2-pod episode that broke down our pitcher boards. You can go more into that, but I just want to leave anybody who hasn't drafted yet with this idea on Logan Webb. And I'm probably repeating myself. I may have said this last week or 2 weeks ago, but because he's not all out with the velocity, he's in the low to mid 90s, you know, 92, 93, something like that, gets a lot of ground balls. They just added Chapman, who's just a wizard at third base. And that's such a hard place to hit a home run. Joe Posnanski had a great piece today on the Giants and talked about how they've swung and missed with their big free agents. They wanted Ohtani. They wanted Bryce Harper. They even, it seems like they threw a better offer at JD Martinez, and Martinez took the Mets offer in part because he didn't want to hit in San Francisco because it's such a hard place to hit the ball out of the park. Well, how do we leverage that? We draft Logan Webb, and I want you to do that this week if you have a draft coming.
Yeah. Kevin Gausman's teammates, two of them, are also dealing with arm issues. Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson. So there, that is the closer and the main setup man. Mm-hmm. Romano is dealing with a little bit of an elbow issue. They are both going to begin the season on the IL. They are currently playing catch. Romano has reported no pain, right? But he needs to play catch and then build back up to bullpens and then face some live hitters and then come back. And the season hasn't started yet. The Blue Jays aren't going to rush their closer back until he's fully healthy. So two-part question I have for you is if you in your drafts coming up this week, is this at all impacting how you're drafting Jordan Romano? And are you interested at the end of your draft in drafting Yimi Garcia, knowing that he's probably the closer, but it's probably just going to be for like 2 weeks? And is that worth it for you to put him on your roster?
Oh, I think it is, because possession of the job is such a huge part of the closer race. And it's unfortunate for Jordan Romano because along with Duvall of the Giants, he was one of my second tier closer. He could lead the majors in saves. I love the value. And then once the elbow came up, I'm like, okay, I got to walk that back because I don't want to draft into somebody who's currently hurt. And everybody, here's the thing with these injuries is people are always going to tell you, oh yeah, it's not that bad. You know, the Mets think they're going to get Senga back in May. I'd be shocked if Kodai Senga is pitching in a Major League Baseball game on May 5th. I would be flabbergasted. I don't want to bet on guys who are already hurt. When the injuries we always talk about, you know, elbow, forearm, shoulder, you know, if it's one thing, if they broke their toe or it's a tibia injury or something, you know, it's a body injury that's going to heal. Once it's healed, they're probably fine. Once they ramp up to normal activity, you know, another guy I would consider in a deeper league, an AL only league or a super deep mixed league, Nate Pearson was a first round pick that we were all excited about not that long ago. And there's just a million stories in the Major League Baseball universe of pitchers who, for whatever reason, don't make it as starters. They get repurposed as relievers and they end up a lot of times being wipeout guys. I'm always chasing pedigree. I care about when guys were drafted for many different reasons. And I wonder if maybe he could get a chance at this. And this is what you do in the opening week, right? When Toronto's playing, if Toronto has a lead, and I think even if you don't subscribe to the baseball package, your TV provider might give it to you for free for a week. I think you should subscribe to it anyway, but even if you don't want to do that, you'll probably have access to this stuff. Watch the game. Turn the game on. Listen to the announcers. See who's warming up in what inning. Even if, say, the game gets out of hand, the Blue Jays break it open, they score 7 runs in the 8th inning. Whoever was warming up was going to get the save before the game got out of hand. That stuff has value. That stuff is important. Now, RotoWorld's going to have a lot of that stuff for you. You can get a lot of it on Twitter.
All on the news.
And stuff like that. Yeah, for sure. So we're going to try to help you with that. But that's – people will say, well, they didn't have a save chance. I don't know what they're going to do. They'll tell you what they're going to do by who's warming up. And you can get really important tips. And that's – so much of this stuff, I can't emphasize enough how we want to be first to things, right? Now, if you're in a casual league – you can sit back and wait till guys get saves and pick guys up. If you're a competitive league, you might – in fact, if you're in a first-come, first-serve league and it's not my favorite format to play in, that player might get picked up when he's warming up in the bullpen. He might not even pitch before somebody picks up a speculative Garcia share or a Pearson share or maybe Chad Green gets a save chance, whatever.
Right.
So this is the type of stuff you want to be looking at if you're in a league where you're fighting for every save.
And we saw that a little bit in the opening series where, you know, Robert Suarez didn't get a save, but he was the clear guy at the back of the Padres, you know, bullpen. And if you're just looking for stats, you may not know that intentional, you know, exactly like how the leverage works. So definitely keep in mind stuff like that. We had a couple, rosters are thinning down. We're getting guys making the rotations. Big announcement today, Monday afternoon, was that Jared Jones has made the Pirates rotation. He came into spring training, you know, behind Paul Skeens in terms of just like general excitement. You know, everybody loved Paul Skeens. Jared Jones has thrown 16 and a third shutout innings this spring. He did walk 8 in those innings. Walks were a little bit of an issue for him in the minors prior to last year. He corrected the walks a lot in the minors last year. His last outing was actually really good in terms of walks, so there's been some inconsistency there. He is a rookie. There will be ups and downs, right? We've said this all the time. But I have a lot of shares of Jared Jones. I was getting him at the end of drafts, hoping that he made the rotation and figuring that I would just cut him if he didn't. This is a guy, if you don't know, who his arsenal is built on a high 90s fastball. He averaged 97.6 on the fastball this spring. He gets a really good vertical break on it, which means it sinks less than a normal fastball, and he keeps it up in the zone a lot. So it is a really high-performing fastball, and he has a really hard, tight slider, like a gyro slider. It's about 89 miles per hour. It gets tons of whiffs and is a great pitch. And then the rest of the arsenal is kind of like, hey, a changeup that grades out pretty well, but he doesn't throw a lot, a little bit of a show me curve. But I think that those two pitches are real plus pitches and can carry him, especially since he is a righty and will face mainly righties. But I'm curious if you are into pitchers like this, a rookie without a long track record. Are you buying shares now that he is in the rotation, or are you going to let somebody else take that gamble?
Yeah, the problem, we love the zero ERA, and it was the 16 innings. So you're like, okay, that's not an insignificant sample. but he walked so many guys. And even the strikeout per nine was only 8.27. So that's under code also. Scouting report on him, this has always had plus stuff. He just wasn't able to command it. He's somebody who I'll look to see if Jones could pitch his way onto my mixed league roster. And if I'm late on that, I can live with that. I need to see something in the regular season before he's an actionable move for me.
Yeah. I fully understand that. I think I would be the same way if I didn't have him on a lot of rosters. Mm-hmm. I like, as we talked about before, I like getting these, like, who knows, on the bench and seeing how the first few starts go. Mm-hmm. And we'll talk about what we should be looking for a little bit later. The two other guys kind of jumped into this conversation as well. Both are not rookies in terms of the fact that they have pitched MLB innings before, but they're both young guys who claimed rotation spots. Max Meyer will be in the Marlins rotation after the injuries to Yuri Perez and Braxton Garrett. And, you know, those injuries go on and on. It seems like Meyer is only in the rotation temporarily. However, the Marlins rotation is entirely left-handed other than Max Meyer. And Braxton Garrett is likely to return first. He is also left-handed. So the Marlins may decide when Garrett is ready that they would rather bump out Ryan Weathers or Trevor Rogers and let Meyer stay in the rotation so they could at least have one righty. And then the other news was that Luis Gil has earned the fifth starter role for the Yankees. You know, while Garrett Cole is sidelined, he was electric in spring training. Curious if you are into either Max Meyer or Luis Gil in let's call it 12 team leagues.
Meyer's more interesting to me because of the park is better for a pitcher and he has the first round pedigree, mid 20s, about reasonable time for a breakout. I give him maybe a 30% chance to stay in the rotation all year. He'd be the one guy of the two here who I would put a chip on.
Yeah. I think I'm going to go with Luis Gil. I know that Max Meyer has the pedigree. And so I understand that a lot of people are going to kind of, you know, to really kind of gear towards that. He didn't pitch at all last year, which is, you know, mildly problematic. Also, the arsenal is super slider heavy, like 50% slider, and it is a really good slider, so that is understandable. But in the brief minor league sample we saw in 2022, the fastball was fine but not great, and then he has an okay changeup. So I just look at it like I'm not saying he's not going to be good. This is, you know, he's a pitcher who is just 25 years old. He's got the ability to kind of, you know, I know he's tinkering with other pitches and trying to add to the depth of the arsenal. But I think what we see right now at this exact moment, Luis Gil just looks a little bit more dynamic to me. His stuff has really played up a lot this spring. I think his fastball is better than Max Meyer's is in terms of just like its overall performance. And then even though the slider isn't as good, it is a good slider. If you know, Eno Saris tweeted something out today that if you're just going by like, you know, how players looked in the spring, their stuff plus grades, Luis Gil had the fifth best stuff plus grade of all pitchers in the spring who threw at least 100 pitches. Jared Jones is actually fourth, by the way. But so I like Gil, and I think there's potentially a longer leash, a longer runway with him, because I don't really think there's anybody knocking down that door while Garrett Cole is out. Whereas there's a possibility that in 2 or 3 weeks, Meyer is back in the minors, because we know they don't want to throw him too many innings since he missed all of last year. So that's why I side with Gil, but I think they're both worth putting on your bench and seeing how their first starts go.
Yeah, two other things about Gil. Comes off the Tommy John surgery in May of 2022, and we know that's a two-year thing. So this should be the year where we actually see some returns, and he's an exciting player. And to anybody who's looking for Gil on your waiver wire, it's G-I-L is the last name. Now, Eric, I'm always impressed that your pronunciation record is exemplary. You know, no Luis Rengifo from you. You're going to say Rengifo. But, yes, it's Luis Gil is how you say it. G-I-L is how you spell it. So when you're on the waiver wire, that's how you play that.
Yes. I like it's, you know, the pretty – I made all those mistakes last year with him. So you learn through failure. We have talked a lot
but
about.
I'll say this. I still there's certain names I still don't know, like Alvin Kamara. I feel like that's tomato tomato. I hear that either way, it doesn't matter. I remember Austin Crozier, the basketball player, was telling Bill Raftery, you could say Crozier, you can say Crozier, it doesn't matter to me. Just get my first name right and you know, describe me knocking down a 3-pointer. But
some people it bothers more than others. Yeah.
I appreciate your ability to get it right.
Thank you. I'm cognizant of it because my last name has been mispronounced most of my life.
How do you say your last name? I just call Samulski. You Eric.
Yeah, Samulski. I get a lot of Samulskis or Samulski, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah,
we get through it. We get through it.
I don't mind when people say Pianowski, even though it's Pianowski.
Yeah.
When people want to call me Pienkowski when there's no second K in there, it's like, no, you know, I mean, right. Make a little bit of an effort. If you call me Pianowski, you tried. You got it wrong, but you tried.
The attempt is all that matters.
Yeah, the attempt is all that matters. Honestly, you know, my colleague Brad Evans, my former colleague Brad Evans, who's now bounced around since then, doing a great job with his MBA. I'm sorry, with his college basketball stuff this month. He called me Pianowski for like 8 years. I just never corrected him. I'm like, okay, doesn't matter. I'm not hung up in that stuff.
Yeah, I know you mean me. You have been a huge proponent of the Orioles all preseason. We talked about them on the kind of our favorite bets articles, all this sort of stuff. The prospect that made the Orioles opening day roster was not Jackson Holliday.
It was
not Kobe Mayo.
Nope.
It was Colton Cowser. Who got a brief cup of coffee last year at the big league level and didn't look great, but was a top 30 prospect by, you know, MLB pipeline rankings. So there was prospect pedigree there. He's looked great this spring in 46 at-bats, hitting .304 with 6 home runs and a 1,135 OPS. Hitting homers off lefties, too. He's a left-handed hitter, so that has looked really good. Do you think he can push Austin Hayes for that starting left field job? Are you trying to draft shares of Colton Cowser, given that he is on the roster and, you know, we have that prospect pedigree behind him?
This looks like a natural platoon, right? I mean, you know, a righty hitter in Hayes, a lefty hitter in Cowser. But at some point, and Hayes is not a bad player. I mean, his last couple of years, OPS plus 114, 105, 107. That's a plus offensive player. But as you mentioned, Cowser, top 30 prospect, went high in his draft class in the first round. I mean, he's seen as a potential star. It's screened here because you have to wear sunglasses to look at this Orioles roster, right? You know, with Rutschman and Holliday and Grayson Rodriguez, it's just ridiculous how loaded. I don't have time to go through how – I think they're going to dominate the American League if they can just get a little bit more pitching because their lineup is going to be so good and they have so many of these guys cost-controlled. I'll be curious if they go to the model where they try to buy out the arbitration years and lock some of these guys up, or if they take their chances that they can re-sign them. That's a story for another day. But at some point, Hayes is a good player. Hayes is a plus player. But at some point, I think you have to see if Cowser can be a great player. So I'm mindful. I think Cowser at some point, and unfortunately, it's maybe not the best way to do this, but it maybe it's who comes out hot, right? I mean, right. I feel sorry for Austin Hayes if he gets off to a 1-for-14 start and then like Cowser hits a home run or something, because then maybe they give Cowser a chance to run with the job. But eventually you have to say who's hit the highest ceiling. We're not, the Orioles are no longer trying to be competitive. Oh, it's cute. They're over 500. Oh, it's cute. They suck into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. They think they can win a World Series this year. And that means you should try to play the guy who has the highest ceiling.
And it's very clear that, like, you know, they don't feel pressured to put their prospects on the roster, right? Because they could have put, you know, Mayo or Jackson Holliday on the roster. They put Colton Cowser on the roster because he earned the spot on the roster. Now, he could just be a left-handed hitter off the bench. But if he keeps hitting the way he's hitting, I think you have to make that move if you're the Orioles, because Hayes is who he is. And he's, as you mentioned, a solid player. He could also be a great fourth outfielder. He can play center field. He actually grades out better in center field than in left field, oddly. And it could just be the way the ball comes off the bat. He gets better reads in center, whatever it is. So, you know, he could fill in and move all over. So I think Hayes and, to a lesser extent, Cedric Mullins are a little bit on notice that, like, the young guys are coming. Mullins and Hayes will both be in their final year of arbitration next year. that arbitration salary will probably be over $7 million. So there's also a possibility that the Orioles could decide to trade one of those two if they feel like, you know, they have a natural replacement in Kowser, in, you know, Heston Kjerstad, who's, you know, waiting in the wings, all these guys. You know, I think Mullins is the far better. I know Mullins is the far better defensive center fielder. So it feels to me like Hayes is the one who is on the shorter leash. But you never know. Kowser has played some center field in the minors. Hayes has played center field, so the Orioles may feel good enough about it. But I am willing to take shares of Colton Kowser now in drafts and let him be on my bench for the first couple of weeks because I think the talent in the bat is very real, and I think the job opportunity will be there eventually.
A couple of things. We're searching for upside with our late-round picks, and we're also searching for stories that we think might develop quickly, and maybe this will be a thing where – you draft Kowser or you take him in a reserve round or you know, once the IL designations don't get mad at me. I don't make those rules, but once those IL designations kick in and you're looking for lottery tickets, a guy like Kowser makes sense. And maybe he's easy to release if 2 or 3 weeks into the season, the story hasn't gone
right
as you wanted. And I just want to say one more thing on the Orioles, then we'll move on. How loaded are they that I just listed off a bunch of all their young talent? I didn't even mention Gunnar Henderson, who was like the big thing a year ago.
Yeah. It's, well, now he's old hat. He's on the team. We don't have to talk about him anymore.
He's on the team, right? Yeah. He's just another superstar on the team who's, man, you know, I don't draft Adley Rutschman because he doesn't make sense for my fantasy strategy, but I mean, he's like one of my five favorite players in baseball already. He's going to win. He's the player we thought Matt Wieters was going to be. Not Wieters had a perfectly respectable career. But the talk was like Matt Wieters was like going to be an MVP candidate. He never really got to that level. Adley Rutschman is going to win an MVP someday. I mean, this is going to be a superstar.
It's a great team for sure. The last piece of news we had this morning, the Reds announced that TJ Friedl, who had fractured his wrist a few weeks ago and everybody kind of thought he'd be out multiple months, they said right now he's going to be out just 6 to 8 weeks from now, that he's progressing really well. So there's a chance that Friedl is back in, you know, in 6 weeks, which would put him back kind of like at the beginning of May, maybe beginning or the end of May. So my question to you in your drafts this week, if you are drafting on a platform like Yahoo, which has IL spots, and you know he's going to start the year on the IL, do you think that TJ Friedl is a good draft pick as an IL stash, or are you not interested enough in the talent profile to have him to pick him?
I'd have to really like the price. I'd have to be getting him for almost nothing. And the problem is that you don't have to seek out injuries. They're going to find you. Look at how many pitchers have gotten hurt this spring. And I realize it's just part of that is just breaking the adhesions and getting ready for the season. And of course, if any pitcher has a hiccup in spring training, most teams are just going to step back and say, hey, whoa, I'm not taking any chances here. But is it funny that you looked at the Reds a month ago, how jumbled their roster was, and with Friedl being hurt and with Matt McClain, who's tumbled down my draft board. He was somebody who I really wanted a few weeks ago. Now I'm worried he may miss a major chunk of the season. All of a sudden, this place is for everybody to play, or just about everybody to play, where I didn't know what to do with Jonathan India. Well, now I'm drafting him. Spencer Steer, I wanted really badly in two salary cap drafts on Sunday, and everybody else wanted him, I mean, in part because he qualifies at like 19 positions, but a really good hitter. It's just funny how sometimes teams look like they don't have enough slots for everybody, and then the injuries sort it out. But I can't draft McClain right now. And Friedl, I know it's great. Like, draft a guy, you're getting IL and all that. But then what? A couple of your pitchers are going to get hurt in a week or two. And then you're going to have to maybe cut somebody you don't want to cut. I just, unless it's a giveaway, I'm going to sit Friedl out.
Yeah, I like that, unless it's a giveaway. I'm willing to take him in, like, maybe the last couple of rounds of my draft. If I feel like everything is my starting spots are filled, my key bench spots are filled, and then it's like, okay, I'm going to take this flyer because, you know, 350 to 400 plate appearances of Friedl is probably better than my late round share of, you know, I don't know who I've been getting in some of these places, but like my late round share of, actually, I really like Parker. I was going to say Parker Meadows because I took him at the end of my last draft, but I really like Parker Meadows. But, you know, depending on the depth and the size of your league, like, you know, maybe a Sal Frelick type. I know I like the multi-position eligibility he is probably going to get, but as of right now, he's just outfield. You know, other guys like in the Brewers outfield, your Garrett Mitchells. You know, if you're still drafting Willie or Abreu, who all these outfielders we talked about at the end. I like taking Friedl there. We are going to dive into some of our early season analysis, but before we do that, we're closing in on opening day, but it's never too late to squeeze in another draft. Scott and I both have drafts coming up this week. So if you are cramming before the regular season begins, grab your Roto World Baseball draft guide. It's loaded with comprehensive positional rankings, projections, player profiles to ensure your draft is a success. Visit NBCSports.com/draft guide and use code baseball24 to get 10% off at checkout. That's NBCSports.com/draft guide and use code baseball24 to get 10% off at checkout. So let's just do a little run through. We're going to talk about some of the things that you and I do in the early season to help us with roster decisions, waiver ads, all that kind of stuff. You mentioned something earlier in the show that I want to call back to, because I think it's one of the biggest things that I do is try to watch games. In particular, I really think this is important for pitchers, right? If you have MLB.tv or if you sign up for a free trial for, you know, a little bit of time, they do that on a lot of the TV networks. You can sign up for like a week free trial. Try to watch the games. Search on YouTube if you need to. Look on Twitter. I think it's really important, especially with pitchers early in the season. We know that pitchers are not going to be as crisp as they will be in a month because they're still ramping up, right? And most of these pitchers are not going to come out and throw 90 to 100 pitches. They're still getting to their full health. So if you just look at a box score and you see, oh, he gave up 4 runs in 4 innings, you know, that's pretty bad. And yes, you can look on StatCast and you could see how many whiffs he got and you could see all that stuff we now have access to. But I think sometimes like seeing the presence on the mound, seeing where the pitches were they not competitive at all? Were they just a little bit off? Was he struggling with just one pitch with all pitches? Were pitches like actually really good pitches, but the hitters just put really good swings on it? Those are things that help me decide if I'm going to move too quickly on a pitcher or not. I do think there are worlds where you can move on from a pitcher really like after one start, but I think you kind of need to see it to do that. I don't want to just move on because he got blown up. I want to move on because he got hit hard, because nothing was commanded well, but nothing also looked really dynamic. It just looked kind of messy. Maybe the presence on the mound was like full of like doubt and just like he looked like he was rattled. Like those are guys that I'm willing to move on from, you know, early on.
All really good tips. You know, one thing I love to do in addition to watching as much as I can is I like to have like a scout on every team or as many teams as I can. If I need Cubs intel, Sarah Sanchez is an ace with that team. She's ace with all 30 teams, but she watches every Cubs game. She'll go to 20 Cubs games. Jason Collette is my friend on the Rays. If I need Tampa Bay intel, I go to him. I have a friend named Lisa who's a huge Dodger fan. She's watching every game from her couch. So if I didn't see something, if I want to know, hey, did Mookie hurt his hamstring or was he running awkwardly in the third inning? She knows. She's watching the game. My friend XP is a huge Giants fan. He gave me some intel a couple of years ago, said the ball was flying differently. They'd made a cosmetic change at the park, and I was able to get out in front of that because normally they don't hit home runs in San Francisco. So the world is a lot smaller now, obviously social media. Take advantage. If your college roommate is watching every Royals game, there you go. You can, you know, knock on his or her door and get some information as you need it. Also, don't be afraid to just listen to people smarter than you. Joe Sheen's a friend of mine. His baseball newsletter is outstanding. I recommend it to anybody. But when you say watch the games, also, and I know there are different levels of announcing team. I think maybe the Mets and the Giants have better announcers than some other teams do, but you know, I care what Gary Cohen and Keith Hernandez and Ron Darling are telling me. And also, by the way, DJ Short is your source for all Mets stuff. He wants you to tweet at him anytime something bad happens to the Mets, and he can explain it away for you. But DJ's a great guy. I'd like to see the Mets have a few things go right this year. God knows everything went wrong for them last year. But so I'm not afraid to, you know, copy off somebody else's paper, you know, or get the intel from somebody who's watching the team closer than I am because they have the game on every night or they're in the ballpark, stuff like that. What else am I looking for? Role changes, batting slot, the early batting order. I love just when the lineups come out. It just makes me tingly to see who's hitting where, who's platooning, what teams are running. Ron Washington, and I don't want to draft any of the Angels, but he keeps saying we're going to run like crazy. Does that carry over to the regular season? We know baseball obviously has changed some rules in recent time to encourage stolen bases. We saw a lot of them last year. Who seems interested in running? Who isn't?
Right.
And then walks and strikeouts. Walks and strikeouts are always the purest stat we have. It's the water of baseball analysis.
Yeah.
If you're walking, you're getting your pitches to hit. If you're striking out, you know, that reflects something. And obviously for pitchers, even walks and strikeouts are probably even more important than they are for hitters. So those are some of the things I'm looking at early in the season and some of the cheat codes I use to get that intel that maybe my opponents don't have.
Yeah, I love that you brought that stuff up. Lineup spots, obviously incredibly important. Lineup spots, like the batting order, and then also we can get a sense of early kind of platoons, mm-hmm. If players are being sat versus a particular pitcher, a particular handedness, or moved down. Right, sometimes a guy is a leadoff hitter, but then he hits eighth, no lefties in the lineup. Those are things we kind of need to keep an eye on. I love that you mentioned this, the running component. I'm drafting a lot of Zach Neto because I like him just in general. And also he has 4 steals in 20 games this spring. He had 5 steals in 84 games with the Angels last year. I think that adds a little fuel to the fire of Ron Washington saying we're going to run more. You know, we're letting our top young guys run a lot. So I think that's interesting. But those kind of team trends are important to notice early on. Are we going to see more stolen bases than last year? We don't know. There's arguments to suggest we will, but let's see what teams are running, and let's see how often they're running, in particular with a new manager, right? Look at teams with new managers and say, are they running as much as last year? Am I going to kind of get the same stolen base amounts that I expected to get last year?
Let me piggyback the last two things you said, because they tie in together so nicely, right? Batting slot for guys we think are going to run is gigantically important. If you saw in 2022 that Lane Thomas took over as Washington's leadoff man, or he batted first or second, I think it was leadoff, down the final quarter of the season, thought, okay, maybe there's something here. And then he had a breakout season last year, batting at the top of that order. Last year, late in the season, or maybe the middle of the season, CJ Abrams at some point took over as their leadoff man, and he was great. The difference, like right now, Zach Neto, if you look on projected lineups, he's probably going to hit ninth, but if he shows anything, or maybe Renjifo was ready to start the season, a little dinged up, where would he go in the order? He'd bet first or second. That's a total game changer for these guys. So batting slot always matters to us anyway, but guys who hit in the middle of the lineup, sometimes, like, you know, Kyle Tucker, he hits six, it's a little bit frustrating, but, you know, it's one or two slots down. A lot of times with a guy like Neto, we saw it with Thomas. We saw it last year with Abrams. It's the difference between literally hitting first or ninth. Tommy Edman's always living that life with St. Louis. Is he batting leadoff today? Is he batting eighth or ninth?
Yeah.
So that's something you say, what do I care about? I mean, if Bryce Harper hits second or third, it really doesn't matter. If Freddie Freeman hits second or third, it really doesn't matter. With these guys who run first, ninth, even in the life of the universal DH, is a significant, it's a huge thing. I can't say it enough. So when you see somebody, maybe you're not thinking of picking up, oh, he's in the bottom of the order, I don't know, and then he steals a base, and then he's batting leadoff the next day, that's it. You know, put the phone down, go grab him right now.
And the Angels said Neto's going to hit ninth, but they're also hitting Anthony Rendon first right now. Like, they don't have a prototypical leadoff hitter. So even though they know
Neto, they're good players. If Neto comes out hot, they can't hit him ninth.
Right. They won't.
They don't have enough good players to do that.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned plate appearances and strikeouts, all that, because I think that, like, strikeouts and walks, those plate discipline metrics, they are some of the earliest to stabilize. And stabilization rates are really important. You can just Google, like, fantasy baseball stabilization rate, or look at a particular rate, like when does strikeout rate stabilize? You can find that out. When does barrel rate stabilize? And that way you're figuring out, like, how early should I actually pay attention to this? Those plate discipline metrics stabilize really quickly, so you can really see if players are beginning to make, you know, improvements, both in just, like, how much contact they're making, but also in, like, you know, their chase rates. Or if you go on FanGraphs, it's, you know, under O swing, what rate outside of the zone are they swinging at? I don't want to look at those in a vacuum, and I think it's important that, like, any stats that Scott and I are mentioning right now, you're not just, like, pulling up a leaderboard of that stat and adding players who have the lowest strikeout rate, right? These are all things where, like, the stats in the first couple weeks of the season are going to tell a part of the picture. And depending on who that player is, that part of the picture could be super important. If it's a player that really struggled with decision-making last year and was swinging out of the zone terrible, then his O-swing rate early in the year might be more important than just a Bryce Harper's O swing rate or whatever, just a normal player, because I want to see, are there some signs of growth from what I saw last year to what I'm seeing this year? For example, I really like Lawrence Butler on the A's. I have him in a couple draft and hold leagues. I don't know if he's going to start the year for Oakland. I think he's better than most of the guys they have in the outfield, and he should. He has made huge gains in his strikeout rate and his contact rate at every minor league stop that he's made when he's had to repeat or gone back for the year after. He looks really good in the spring. He seemed to have made really good gains there. Do they carry over into regular season games? If they do, then I think I can start to get a guy who's then going to get into the lineup, and then I am getting the production once he's in the lineup. So I'm looking for players who are showing signs of growth in specific areas that I think will earn them a spot in the lineup. I'm not just doing like a leaderboard. One of the stats I will look at early on, just again as part of the picture, barrel rate does stabilize relatively early when compared to other stats. Barrel rate stabilizes around 50 batted ball events. So 50 balls put in play by a hitter, barrel rate begins to stabilize. If you think that hitters are getting like 4 at-bats a game, maybe they're putting 2 or 3 batted balls into, you know, a game whenever possible, you're looking at maybe like 30, 40 games where barrel rate starts to stabilize. So if I'm 3 weeks into the season, you know, I'm already more than halfway toward that stabilization rate. So again, it's not fully locked in, but I'm beginning to start to see some trends, and I'm willing to take early gambles on guys that are squaring up the baseball often. So barrel rate is a stat I'll look at in the early season and not say like, oh, hey, Colton Cowser has a 21% barrel rate in his first 7 games, so he's going to have a 20% barrel rate this season. Well, no, but he's hitting the ball really hard right now, and I will gamble with him on my bench that he might continue to hit the ball really hard, even if it's not, you know, at the same rate that he's doing now. So that's a stat that I like early as well.
Yeah, so very well said. As you keep mentioning stabilization, and for anybody, if that's confusing you, the whole idea is that some stats take on significance and meaning quicker than others. Some need a deeper sample. Some we can get information from a smaller sample, and it's really important to know the difference. You don't need to understand it on a calculus level. You just need to know basically back of envelope what it means. And Russell Carlton, who I think is known as Pizza Cutter, did a bunch of great stuff that's bookmarked, I think, on FanGraphs. You can read if you want to go deeper into it. There's a corollary to this, and this is more maybe art than science, but I also want to leave myself open to something called signature significance, which is a phrase that Bill James coined, which is the idea that some things that you can achieve, some production is so out of the, it's such an outlier that it's almost impossible. It doesn't have meaning, even though there's no sample behind it. Like if they call up, this would never happen now because nobody throws no hitters anymore. But if some no-name pitcher got called up and like struck out 15 guys and threw a no hitter, even if he had no pedigree and had mediocre track record, you just want to pick him up on the idea that maybe he's great.
Right.
And so when I see anybody who I'm not overly familiar with have a big strikeout game, that makes me interested. If I see anybody, and this can be a usage thing too, if say there's just like some nobody on the Angels or the A's that we don't even talk about, and he has a 3 stolen base game, I'll just pick him up in the case of maybe he's confident. Maybe they give him a green light. Maybe that marks his space in the territory of a weak lineup. And it doesn't matter. And it's also so much of the bottom of your roster, whatever you thought about these guys in the spring, which is nice, and we're trying to make our most intelligent guesses, throw that out when we have real data. When we have, because the teams and the managers are going to react to that. And it's just a fact of life that if somebody's thrown out their first 2 times trying to steal and they're a borderline stolen base guy, they're going to get the red light or they're going to lose their confidence. Or it's like in a basketball game, somebody throws like 3 or 4 bricks up there, unless they're Steph Curry, they're going to stop shooting because that's what everybody else, all the normal people do. So look for signature significance and follow. There are certain stats that have low barrier for entry. Anybody who gets a save, unless there's a really good reason why it's a one-time thing, you have to take seriously. Anybody who's running, if the moment you become an active factor on the stolen base paths, that makes you fantasy viable no matter what else you do. I mean, Esteban Ruiz is not a good hitter, but he wants to run every time he's on base.
Right.
So just understand the barrier of entry is extremely low for saves and steals. Guys don't need, in fact, I think RotoWorld still does a piece called Saves and Steals, which is entirely about trying to hunt down those two categories, because you, if you do nothing else, you're still going to have some fantasy value.
Yeah, I fully agree on that. We're going to come back to one of the things that you just mentioned, because it's something I want to talk about. Like you mentioned where you drafted a player. We're going to come back to that in a second. I do want to know, we talked about some hitting stats we look at early. Pitching stats, where are you on? Like, what do you pay attention to? We obviously talked about watching pitchers is exceptionally important to figure out kind of like what their stuff looks like. Are there any stats that you look at early for your pitchers as well?
I'm looking at walks, strikeouts, velocity. I want to see how often they throw strikes when they're behind in the count. And then, of course, the leverage, the usage, where they fit into the pecking order if they're a reliever.
I love that. Those are things that matter. Again, we talked about, you know, plate discipline, metric stabilizing early for hitters. That's obviously the same for pitchers. So I believe in looking at kind of walks and strikeouts for overall command. I also believe in using Stuff Plus. Stuff Plus is something that also tends to stabilize relatively quickly. So if I am not able to watch as much of a pitcher as I want and see like, oh, I really like the slider, right? I might go to Stuff Plus after a couple of starts and see, okay, how does the slider grade out individually as a pitch? Now, important to remember, you know, we've seen a lot of pitchers with great grades on their Stuff Plus not perform well. So it is a component, but it will help you to understand how the pitch shape and location and all of that is working early on. If you haven't been able to watch as much of that pitcher as you'd like, it gives you a little bit of a picture. And then I also think schedule is totally overlooked in the early part of the year. There may be a pitcher that you're on the fence about. I don't know if he's really like, you know, the first start wasn't a great first start. I think there might be some talent in there, but I don't really know if I want to keep him on my roster. I look at his upcoming schedule and he's facing the Dodgers and then going to Coors. Okay, well, if I'm not going to start him his next two starts and I already don't know if I want to keep him on my roster, then if there's another person, if there's a pitcher I really like, or if there's a hitter I'm intrigued by, I might just make that swap, because I'm also taking a calculated risk that if I'm on the fence about this guy starting and that's before he faces the Dodgers and then goes to Coors, those starts are probably not going to be strong starts. So I might be able to pick him up later too, because the other people in my league are probably going to say, oh, well, he had two really bad games, so why am I going to stash this guy? So those are things that, like, yes, they're calculated risk, because if he goes out and dominates against the Dodgers, then I've lost him probably for good unless I spend a lot of money on fab. But I think it is a component if you're unsure of a player on your roster, you don't know, if you don't really think you're going to use them for a while, it might make sense to put that spot or let that spot be used by somebody else.
For sure. And also remember, if you're ever confused about a pitcher, you can always see what Eno Saris said or what Nick Pollock said, which is like two of my go-tos. You keep mentioning Stuff Plus. Eno's doing such amazing work with pitching analysis and making us all smarter.
Yeah, for sure. That's going back to, like, you know, the analyst that you trust. You mentioned guys that, you know, you drafted. I'm curious for you, in the early going, is there a threshold you use with, you know, players that you drafted that gives them a little bit more leash than somebody else? Is it like a round cutoff where you're like, if this was a top 10 pick, I'll give him, you know, more time than somebody who is afterwards?
It's one of those, I know it when I see it. And also understanding this fluidity there. If we talked about Jared Kelnick a month ago, I would have given you a totally different version of how I feel about Kelnick. Than to me, he was one of the big losers of spring training, right? He has a really bad spring. And then they go out and trade for a right-handed bat. Now Kelnick's on the strong side of a platoon batting ninth. I know the Dodgers lineup is great, but we talked about, you know, Zach Neto can move up to first. Jared Kelnick would need the planets to align before he's ever going to bat leadoff for the Braves. I mean, he's undraftable now, and he's somebody who I was actually pretty excited, somewhat quasi-excited about not that long ago. But I know it when I see it. That's where the instincts of playing the game take over. But I will say this. If you're afraid to make a move, to make a cut. If you're afraid to cut somebody that you're going to regret later, and look, don't cut your third round pick or your fifth round pick unless something catastrophic happens, they get hurt or something, and then you that totally changes. But anybody you spent draft capital, notable draft capital on, they get a leash because they're getting a leash in real life and you drafted them for a good reason and all that. I think everybody knows that, but never hurts to remind you of that. But
yeah,
if you're afraid of cutting a player who is going to get picked up by somebody else and come back to haunt you, if you're going to act like you're never going to do that because it's going to scare you and spook you and ruin your season, that's like the poker player who never gets caught bluffing. You have to make mistakes sometimes or else you're playing way too conservatively. Again, this is not – I'm not signing off and you playing with your hair on fire. I'm not saying drop Mike Trout, okay? I'm just saying that you can't be afraid that – whatever player you really liked in the 25th round, if you have good reasons to drop him, they're probably reasonable. You need to follow those instincts, knowing that he may end up on somebody else's team.
You absolutely do need to churn. I love the word churning the bottom of your roster. Early on when I started playing, I was very precious with my draft picks. I prepped for a lot for the draft, and so I didn't want to abandon those guys too soon. I think you need to head into your drafts understanding that the last hitter spot on your roster, the last couple pitcher spots, whatever it is, like you are going to churn through those spots throughout the year. And that is a continuous thing. And so if you see something you like, you should try to go and get that player. You're not locking this roster in for the whole season. Having the team that you drafted most intact toward the end of the year doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to win your league, right? That's not how it works. And so if you're able to get better value on the wire, you should try to make that move. And that for me leads to, I don't have a pick cutoff, right? Like I don't say, hey, if it was drafted before my 15th round pick, I give that player more time. But there is a point in all of my drafts where my confidence level in that pick shifts. And in some drafts that might be after pick, after my 18th round pick. In some drafts, it might be after my 10th round pick, depending on how the draft went. But I understand the players on my team that I drafted with confidence and the players on my team I drafted with maybe this works, maybe it doesn't. And the guys I drafted with confidence, I'm going to give time to. Even if that's a 16th round pick, if I was ecstatic I got that player in the 16th round and I have really high hopes for that player, I'm not going to let a week and a half, 2 weeks shake me of that confidence. I may put him on notice in my head, but I don't want to overweigh 2 weeks of real games, even though they're real games, from all the offseason work I did that led me to extreme confidence. If I didn't have extreme confidence, then fine. I'm willing to make that decision more quickly. When we do make that decision, when you do finally decide, you know what, I'm going to find somebody else. My question to you early in the season, are you already identifying categories and saying, oh, I need speed, so I need to find somebody for speed? Or if you see a hitter you love and you really believe in on waivers, but he's kind of leans more toward power, but you don't think you really need power, are you just trying to add the best player possible, or are you trying to already attack your categories?
I'm sure I'm going to get the quote wrong, but the great Ron Chandler, and pick up his book, Fantasy Expert, by the way, talked about his ethos was draft for value, and then you can find balance during the season. Obviously, every league is different. Some leagues you can't trade in at all. Other leagues don't have trading. Like, people just don't want to do it. They're reluctant to make a trade. Again, freedom of choice can be a scary thing for people sometimes, but I like to basically focus on, let's draft as much value as I can. Let's keep making incrementally good moves as much as I can in the season, even if they don't necessarily address what I view to be my strengths and weaknesses, because you don't know. Mm-hmm. A lot of times you draft a team, you think I'm really good at this, I'm not that so good at that, and then it doesn't play out that way because life happens. Guys have breakouts, guys have slumps, guys get hurt, roles change, players come out of nowhere. So I'm just looking to, for the most part, if you have a glaring need, of course, you're going to try to address it. If you feel like you're light on saves, you're going to be hawking the wire for every save possibility you can get. I understand that. But for the most part, I'm just trying to make my roster better, and I'll worry about shaping it later. That's generally my ethos. I also want to mention, I probably should have mentioned this earlier, we talked about early things, what we're looking for, right? Most of you listening know the Braves lineup by heart or the Dodgers lineup by heart. or the Astros lineup by heart. And I think this year you're going to want to know that Texas lineup by heart. I cannot wait to watch the Rangers hit one through nine. It's unfair that they have Wyatt Langford and Evan Carter on the same team, and they join a team that just won the World Series. I know Carter was part of that in the postseason. But you also have to watch these Oakland games and see. You know, last year, Zach Gelof was valuable, and Ruiz stole a bunch of bases, and Brent Rooker had, you know, like a two-month period. It didn't really last all year where he was really valuable. They added J.D. Davis. Maybe he'll be good. Is their lineup one through nine going to be fantasy value guys? No. But there's probably a couple of players on the 5 or 6 weaker teams in the league who aren't getting drafted just because they're on teams that people write off and people don't grind over because, like, well, why do I want anybody on that team? They're going to lose 100 games. They're going to, you know, be bottom five in runs scored. Those teams will still have some fantasy value. And a lot of times you can get them for nothing because nobody's sniffing around there. People just want to watch the Braves and the Dodgers and, you know, and the Cubs and the Astros and the glamour teams. And I get that. But there's fantasy value to be had in all 30 cities.
Fully agree. Don't write off any teams in particular. Scott and I are going to tell you some of the hitters that we are keeping an eye on in the first few weeks of the season. But before we do that, the Premier League race is tightening. And one of the most important matches of the season is this Sunday when Manchester City takes on Arsenal as the Gunners try to claim their first title in 20 years. You can watch that matchup at 11:30 Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock. That's this Sunday at 11:30 Eastern, only on NBC and Peacock. So, Scott, let's just leave people with a couple of names at the end of this podcast. Guys who maybe weren't on a lot of your rosters, guys who are kind of, you know, on who you decided not to pull the trigger on, but are guys you're watching early on in the season because you're intrigued by them. This is something where if you play on a league site like Yahoo that allows you to employ a watch list, I think those things are incredibly valuable tools. Add players like this. You can copy Scott and I's list if you want, if you have your own players. Add those players to the watch list. What that enables you to do is when you're deciding to make waiver wire decisions, I don't necessarily need to go through every available player. I have a list already curated by me of players I want to see how they're doing, and I can pull up the watch list and I can see how they're doing early in the season, and I can kind of decide, make my decisions from there. I can add people to it. I can take them off the watch list. I look at it as like the travel squad, right? I don't know that this guy wants to be on my roster yet, but I'm interested. I'm going to bring him and I'll see how it goes. And I can move guys on and off the travel squad from the travel squad to the main roster. So I think that's a really valuable tool that a lot of leagues like Yahoo will give you. And so you should definitely use that. And so Scott, my question to you is, who are the guys who are on your watch list who you don't really have on all your rosters, but you're curious to see how they do early on in the season?
Yeah. As I said, almost the entire Oakland roster would fit there. The Kansas City roster, the Washington roster, a couple of Mets I'm watching really closely. I was really excited about Brett Beatty last year at this time of year. I think DJ was too. Everything went wrong for him, and I realize he might be in a platoon right now, but he's still just 24 years old. There's a chance that Brett Beatty could end up being a plus major league player, maybe even an all-star. Also, Harrison Bader is going to hit ninth for them, but his defense will keep him on the field. He's a power speed guy. I bet he's somebody who I think is a great late round pick, or maybe somebody you keep an eye on is somebody when the IL spots open up or you lose somebody in the first week. Maybe Harrison Bader is a player you take a chance on.
Yeah, I love all those names. I went through Yahoo last night as I was doing waivers, and I marked down guys who are under 50% rostered in most Yahoo formats who I am interested in. We already talked about Luis Gil, who was on there, Luis Severino, Louis Varland, Casey Mize won a roster spot, Mackenzie Gore, DL Hall, Garrett Crotchett, Reese Olson. These are guys who are on a lot of rosters, but are maybe not rostered in all leagues, and I think are guys who can work themselves onto or off your roster depending on how they pitch early on. I'll give you some deeper league pitching options in a second. I will just say for the hitters, some of the guys who I'm looking at who are under 50% rostered. If your league did an early draft and Sedan Rafaela is not added, go out and get him. I already mentioned Zach Neto. Mitch Haniger looks great for Seattle. He always looks great until he's hurt, but right now he's healthy and hitting the ball really well. And so that's something That's a player that I really like adding. We talked about Colton Cowser. I think he's a great stash at the end of your roster, you know, to just to see how things play out in Oakland. I mentioned Lawrence Butler as somebody who I'd like to add in that Oakland situation, just to see how if he can claim a job. I know that Jose Caballero has had a really bad spring for the Rays. The Rays do not have another shortstop. Taylor Walls is not healthy. Ahmed Rosario is a very bad defensive shortstop. I think Jose Caballero is going to get a lot of playing time in the first few weeks of the season until Walls returns. And Caballero can run. So he's somebody I would add onto your bench because this is somebody who could really help you in steals if the hits start to fall. So Caballero is somebody I really like. For deeper league, you know, these are guys who are rostered in 10% of Yahoo leagues or fewer in terms of pitchers. Casey Mize, 10%. Michael Soroka, who's now in the White Sox, 10%. Martin Perez has a really good start to the year. He's with the Pirates now. We've seen Martin Perez be good in the past, so I would certainly take some gambles there. Jared Jones is only 8% rostered. In Yahoo leagues, that may change now that we know he's starting, but he's a guy. Michael Kopech is only 8% rostered in Yahoo leagues. There's a chance he is emerging as the White Sox closer. He was throwing 101 the other day out of the bullpen, so I love that. Zach Littell on the Rays is only 7% rostered. JP France has been good, and he's in the Astros rotation. That's wins there as well. He's only 5% rostered. And then maybe people are a little slow on the news that Michael Lorenzen has signed with the Rangers. He's only 4% rostered in Yahoo formats. Lorenzen was up and down last year, but as you mentioned, Texas is a great team. That's a great pitcher's park. You know, getting a guy who's in the starting rotation for that team is something that I would certainly be looking at early on in the season. So those are some of the guys on my watch list.
You know, when you mentioned Mackenzie Gore, I didn't realize, and there was a bidding war for him in one of my leagues yesterday. I ended up getting him because I really needed pitching. I didn't realize he was only rostered in 39% of Yahoo leagues. Yeah. And I know that that number reflects leagues of different sizes. Some people play in really small leagues, and there's nothing wrong with that. There's no wrong number. I think you have to have four managers to start a league. And so, you know, if you can get four people together, start a league, you can make it AL only or NL only if you want, to trim the player pool down, or if you just want to have superstar teams, whatever. I've played in leagues with small manager counts, and they're still really fun. I'm glad you mentioned Kopech, too, because he fits the profile, right? The White Sox at one point had all these glittering prospects, and almost none of them hit the high end of their range. And in the case of Kopech, he's had trouble staying healthy. I mean, the guy's got a fastball, you know, touched by angels. He just screams out closer, and I get it. They're going to win 58 games, whatever. But if he can be the guy, the automatic, we have a save situation, you're coming in, then he could still get 20 or 25 saves. I think he's a great late round pick if you haven't drafted yet, or one of those watch list or, you know, early pickup guys. Or if nothing else, hey, White Sox have a ninth inning lead. See if Michael Kopech comes in and maybe you can be first of the punch on him. I also think the Orioles, their rotation isn't great. Tyler Wells is going to be in the rotation to start the year. He's, I think, 28% rostered right now. I'm always want to bet on the teams that are going to win games with their starting pitchers. And then you can play the schedule. And, okay, I like, you know, they're playing an AL Central team this week. Again, you wouldn't want to pitch maybe Tyler Wells against the Astros or the Rangers or something like that. But he would make sense as a streaming guy and tied the big ballpark at home since they've switched that dimensions in Baltimore. That's the pitching park now. Mm. He's somebody I'm interested in too.
Yeah, a lot of good names here. And remember, you know, I just want to end with this note that you just said about doesn't matter what league size you're in, which is the idea of, again, of like, we are playing this game, majority of us are playing this game for fun, and missing out on a waiver target that you're really interested in because you were just, you know, too cautious to pull the trigger, and then watching that player, you know, explode is one of the worst feelings. If you have a gut feeling on somebody, just go for it, right? Go for it. You know, listen to the advice that Scott gave. Don't try to cut guys that are, like, you know, in your top 10 picks early on in the season. But with the bottom spots on your roster, like, if you have a gut feeling on a player, add that player, right? You want your team to succeed or fail based on your gut instincts and what you thought you would do. Not, I really want to add this player. I asked three people on Twitter and they said not to, and so I didn't. And then that player went off. you know, even people like us who are watching all these games and studying this and looking at all the stats and whatever, we don't have crystal balls. We're making the best possible guesses and predictions based on the information that we have and the stats at our disposal. And we're giving you our opinions, but they are not, you know, 100% guaranteed. So if you really don't want to miss out on a guy, just don't miss out on a guy. Just make sure you get him. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. But you went with your gut instinct. And sometimes that's the most important thing.
For sure. I want to end with two really quick things. One, I'm in Michigan. Anywhere I go, restaurant, poker game, the Tigers are on. Now, if the Tigers were horrible, I wouldn't want their fantasy players. But I drafted a little bit more aggressively to get a little bit more Riley Green. It's been hard to get Tariq Skubal, but I have some Tariq Skubal. Just so, the Tigers game is on. Oh, they have 8 runs. So mm-hmm. Is Riley Green a part of that? And there's other just cheaper ways to get invested. You know, maybe Cole Keith's the guy. Torkelson had a great second half last year. He was the first overall pick. It seems like the light's going on with him. I got into fantasy baseball because it was fun. And because I'm competitive, I quickly flicked the switch to, well, it's more fun when I win. And look, it is more fun when you win. I'm not going to deny that. But as I get deeper into this experience, Eric, that's more about the fun for me too. I mean, I see that Phillies lineup. Like, I got to have some Bryce Harper this year. I got to have some Trey Turner this year. I talked about how fun the Rangers are. And these answers can be different for you. Identify like the 5 or 6 teams that are fun and get some of their guys. I know it sounds silly, but have some fun with it. And I'll leave you with one more thing. We've kind of been dancing around this, but I just want to give you this one more time. There's a thing called the Monty Hall problem. Look it up on the internet. I think it's on Wikipedia. It's very counterintuitive. It's the idea that you're in a game show. You get to choose one of 3 doors. And then they reveal what there's a prize behind one door. There's not a prize behind the other 2 doors. And then they give away that one of the doors is the wrong answer. And they ask you if you want to swap or not. And even though it's incredibly counterintuitive, you should. And the reason why is because now you have more information. And that basically is fantasy baseball pickup ethos. It's the Monty Hall problem. You drafted, you're smart, you read the Roto World Baseball Guide, you're grinding Twitter news and all that stuff. And then the regular season starts and you have more information, which means whatever you thought of your 28th round pick, the moment somebody looks more fun on the waiver wire, you probably should pick that guy up.
Yeah. And you mentioned that, you know, winning is fun as well, but, you know, winning with your pickups, winning with, you know, mm-hmm. your decisions is maybe the best feeling. So
for sure.
Trust those. We're going to have some fun on the next podcast, the Roto World Baseball Show. DJ Short's going to join us. We're going to do some bold predictions. You know, we mentioned that we don't get things 100% right as analysts. These are ones that are not going to be 100% right. We're going to have some fun, you know, plant our flags in some guys, talk about some things we, you know, that are out there that we think could happen. So make sure you check that out and then make sure you keep things locked to Roto World for the first few weeks of the year. We are going to be giving you constant updates and news. We're covering everything. So Scott mentioned all of those things that are really important for your roster decisions. We will have it covered in the player news. So if you go to NBCSports.com and hit baseball in that top tab for the sports, it will take you to a page where you can get all of our player news. And also you can follow us at RotoWorld_BB on Twitter, and you get all our player news updates there as well. You can follow Scott and I on Twitter. Scott is at Scott_Pianowski. I am at SamskyNYC, and we'll check you out on the next episode of the Roto World Baseball Show.